Hello and welcome. This is Brother Mike at May-21, 2011.com with another message in our series. This will be Hebrews chapter 3, verses 10 through 11. Let me read the two verses to begin. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. In this study, we will cover verses 10 and 11 of Hebrews 3, which I just read, and then we will go over an incident known as Korah's Rebellion, wherein a group of Israelites hardened their hearts against Moses and Aaron, and were erred or strayed by sin in their hearts. It's just one more example of many showing that the Israelites constantly rebelled against Yahweh and His ways. And because the ancient Israelites were a type of the New Testament churches, we see in them a foreshadow of how the churches would be during the New Testament age. That is, they would all rebel against Yahweh, which would end in every one of them worldwide being spiritually judged, beginning on what we had already learned long ago to be May 21, 1988. Now let's look at verse 10 and 11 one at a time. And let's start with verse 10. Wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, they do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. Let's consider the first part of this verse first. Namely, wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said. Here the word wherefore is a translation of the Greek word dio, which means through which. And it refers back to the fact that the Israelites hardened their hearts in the wilderness. Wherefore, Yahweh was grieved with that generation. That is, Yahweh was disgusted with them, or He loathed them, because they hardened their hearts in unbelief toward Him during their 40-year sojourn in the wilderness. In the previous two studies, we went over several of these incidents of unbelief. And we will go over another one of these incidents in this study as well. Now we read that Yahweh was grieved with that generation. That generation, of course, refers to all the Israelites that came up out of Egypt, but then all died in the wilderness due to unbelief. Only their children were finally allowed into the promised land. But that generation also typifies all those who today claim to be Christians and who claim to be delivered from sin and Satan, but who are not finally allowed into heaven, that is, the promised land, because they never were actually born again or born from above Christians. Only the elect, who are but a remnant of all those who call themselves Christians, will ultimately be allowed into heaven, while all the rest of the so-called Christians will die in the wilderness of this world, just like the Israelites died in their wilderness. Except, of course, for Joshua and Caleb, who believed the words of Yahweh and did not give in to the fears of men. These two men are a picture of the elect. Next, after we read, wherefore I was grieved with that generation and said, our verse states, they do always err in their heart. This latter sentence is quite interesting because the verb translated as do err in the sentence, they do always err in their heart, is in the present tense and passive voice of the Greek language. The passive voice means that the subject, they, is passive in the matter. And this sentence can therefore be translated, They are always being erred in their heart. Obviously, this reveals that they are not always erring themselves in their heart, but rather they are always being erred in their heart by something other than themselves, for they are passive in the matter. What could this be? I mean, if they are not causing themselves to err, but they, the subject of our sentence, are passive in the matter, who or what is causing them to err or go astray? I think the answer to our question can be found in Romans chapter 5. Here the Apostle Paul distinguishes between himself and the sin that works in him. We read in verses 14 through 20 of Romans 5, "For we know that the law is spiritual, but I am carnal, sold under sin. For that which I do, I allow not. For what I would, that do I not. But what I hate, that do I. If then I do that which I would not, I consent unto the law that it is good. Now then, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me. For I know that in me, that is in my flesh, dwelleth no good thing, for to will is present with me, but how to perform that which is good, I find not. For the good that I would, I do not, but the evil which I would not, that I do. Now if I do that I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me." Notice that the Lord wants to make it clear that it is not Paul who makes himself sin, but it is the sin within Paul which makes him sin. We read in verse 17, "Now then, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me." And again in verse 20, "Now if I do that I would not, it is no more I that do it, but sin that dwelleth in me." So we can conclude from this that it is not ourselves who make us sin, but it is sin within us that makes us sin. Now, returning to our verse, which states they are always being erred in their heart, we are able to answer our question as to who or what is causing them, that is the Israelites, to always be erred in their hearts. It is not them, for they are passive in the matter, due to the verse being in the passive voice. But it is sin in them as to why they are always being erred in their heart. Just like it was not Paul who caused himself to sin, but it was the sin within him, so also it was not the Israelites who caused themselves to err or go astray in their hearts, but it was the sin within them. Hence, we can now clearly see why the verb "do err" in the sentence, "they do always err in their heart," is actually in the passive voice, and so better translated, "They are always being erred in their hearts," because they, the Israelites, are not the ones doing the erring themselves, but it is sin within in them that is actually doing the erring, while they, the Israelites, are passive in the matter. So our verse now reads, "Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, they are always being erred," that is by sin, "in their heart, and they have not known my ways." This brings us to the last sentence in our verse. "And they have not known my ways." A more literal translation would be, "And they did not know my ways." And what were the ways of Yahweh? Well, it was simply to believe and obey what Yahweh would say. I am reminded of the lyrics to the well-known gospel song, "Trust and Obey." "Trust and obey, 'cause there's no other way. to be happy in Jesus, but to trust and obey. Yes, the ways of Yahweh are that we just simply trust or believe in Him and what He says, and then just obey everything we've learned by listening to Him. It really is that simple, but because of sin in us, it is not an easy thing to do always, especially if one has never been born from above, because then our very inner nature is to sin, and without question, we will sin. But after we have been born from above, that is, saved, we have been granted a new resurrected soul that cannot sin. Nevertheless, the old sin nature still resides in our flesh and at times rears its ugly head to reveal the ugliness of sin, until when on the last day we are given new resurrected bodies to match our new resurrected souls, when sin will be swallowed up by perfection and exists no more. Amen. So, because virtually none of the Israelites who came up from Egypt were saved, they did not have sinless souls, but both their souls and their flesh were bent towards sinning. This resulted in their not being able to clearly listen and obey Yahweh. Yes, they were always being erred or strayed by the sin in their hearts. And Yahweh was grieved with that generation. Now, just as the vast majority of Israelites were not born again or born from above, so the vast majority of people today who call themselves Christians are not saved. The difference between the saved and the unsaved is immense. If we have become saved, we have been granted a new resurrected soul that in itself cannot sin. And this manifests itself in our lives by our having the power over sin. Whereas before we were born from above, we had no power to stop sinning. But now, being born from above, we have power to rid sin from our lives like never before. And the result is that we become a greatly changed person. It should be like night and day. But for most, it has not been like night and day, because they never were saved, although they believe that they have been saved. This is true for all those so-called Christians who still reside in the churches, who have not obeyed the Lord's command to come out from the churches, who have no insight into the fact that we are now residing in Judgment Day, but they still think that we are living in the gospel age when the gospel is still being sent out to the whole world and people are becoming saved. These poor people have no idea that they have been given over to their false beliefs as judgment against them. They don't believe that salvation is still possible because they have been blessed, but they believe it because Yahweh has withheld a blessing from them, and indeed is feeding them a strong delusion that they might believe a lie because they did not love the truth, but instead loved unrighteousness. Therefore, Yahweh has given them up to their unrighteousness that they might be damned when the Lord returns in flaming fire to take vengeance on all those who have exchanged the truth for a lie. Indeed, there are many even now who do not know the ways of Yahweh. His way, ever since May 21, 1988, was for the elect to recognize His command to depart from all churches and denominations, and then to do it. Yes, His way is that all churches, whether Protestant, Catholic, Independent, or otherwise, are under the wrath of Yahweh. So all the elect are to depart from them while looking only unto God and His holy scriptures, which are the 66 books alone found in the Protestant Bible. Additionally, His way is that Judgment Day began on May 21, 2011, with the end to salvation. No one is any longer becoming born from above, except, of course, all those who are in a false gospel and think that they are becoming born from above, when in all truth they are not. They have been deceived by the false Christ, who comes with all power and signs and lying wonders. 2 Thessalonians 2:9. Yes, these are some of the ways of Yahweh that if you deny, it can be said of you as it was said of the Israelites, and they did not know my ways. But let's now move on to our next verse in Hebrews chapter 3, which is verse 11. There we read, "So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest." Here we have the last verse quoted from Psalm 95, 7 through 11, verse 11, which continues the thought from our previous verse, namely that because the Israelites were always being erred or strayed in their hearts by sin, and because they did not know the ways of Yahweh, Yahweh swore in his wrath, "They shall not enter into my rest." Actually, it does not say they shall not enter into my rest, but in the Greek, it literally says, "If they shall enter into my rest." The idea is that because they were always being erred or strayed in their hearts by sin, and they did not know Yahweh's ways, it was iffy. Yes, iffy, as to whether they would enter into Yahweh's rest. In fact, as the Old Testament story goes, they were not allowed to enter into the promised land, but wandered in the desert for 40 years until they died. Only their children were finally allowed into the promised land, along with Joshua and Caleb, who believed in Yahweh that the land was good for food, and that the people of the land were greatly in fear of the Israelites, so that they could be readily conquered, as the Lord had said they would be. Now, as we think about our verse, "So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest," what is the spiritual meaning to rest? The earthly meaning was that rest meant to have entered into the promised land. Once one had entered, he had entered rest. But what does rest mean spiritually? We get the answer in Hebrews chapter 4, where we read in verse 3, "For we which have believed do enter into rest." Here we are told that we which have believed do enter into rest. That is, we who have believed do enter into rest, and to enter into rest is to enter into salvation. Therefore, rest is a synonym for salvation here. We enter into rest when we have become saved, which took place when we believed through the gift of faith granted to us by Christ Jesus. The idea of rest is that when we enter into salvation, that is rest, we have rested from all our own works in attempting to save ourselves, and we have relied on nothing but the works of Christ on the cross to have saved us. We can do nothing to save ourselves, but Christ has done everything necessary to ensure that if we have been granted that gift of faith in Him, then we have entered into the rest found only in Jesus Christ, which ensures our salvation from death and our inheritance in the new heaven and earth. But the promised land, that is the rest that we enter, has a double application. First, it has to do with being spiritually saved or born from above, as we already went over. We who have been born from above do enter into rest. Yes, but second, we who go to heaven do enter into rest as well. Therefore, we can speak about entering into rest when we are first saved, and we can also speak about entering into rest when we do finally go to heaven. This is just another way of saying that salvation comes in two parts. First, spiritual resurrection at the time when we were born again or born from above, but then physical resurrection as well when we do enter into the new heaven and earth in our new spiritual bodies on the last day. So, we who have been saved have already entered into rest, but we will also enter into rest. We could say it will be the completion of our rest that we already possess on the last day when we are transformed into our new resurrected bodies and put on the new heaven and earth to reign with Christ forevermore. Then we will have entered fully into our rest. This will be when our salvation is complete, or our rest, which we began by spiritual rebirth into the promised land, is fully realized. Okay, now let's depart from verse 10 and 11 of Hebrews 3 to continue doing what we have been doing over the last several studies, namely, look at another one of the many incidents wherein the Israelites hardened their hearts against Yahweh and Moses and Aaron, which shows that they were always being erred or strayed by sin in their hearts, and they did not know Yahweh's ways. We read about Korah's rebellion in Numbers chapter 16, and we will read from verses 1 to 50. So this is kind of long, because the story is kind of long, but we'll start in verse 1 in Numbers chapter 16. Now Korah, the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, and Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, and On, the son of Peleth, sons of Reuben, took men, and they rose up before Moses with certain of the children of Israel, 250 princes of the assembly, famous in the congregation, men of renown. And they gathered themselves together against Moses and against Aaron, and said unto them, You take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord. And when Moses heard this, he fell upon his face. And he spoke unto Korah and unto all his company, saying, Even tomorrow the Lord will show who are his and who is holy, and will cause him to come near unto him, even him whom he hath chosen will he cause to come near unto him. This do. Take you censers, Korah, and all his company, and put fire therein, and put incense in them before the Lord tomorrow. And it shall be that the man whom the Lord does choose, he shall be holy. You take too much upon you, you sons of Levi. And Moses said unto Korah, Hear, I pray you, you sons of Levi. Seem it but a small thing unto you that the God of Israel has separated you from the congregation of Israel to bring you near to himself to do the service of the tabernacle of the Lord and to stand before the congregation to minister unto them? And he has brought thee near to him and all thy brethren, the sons of Levi, with thee, and seek you the priesthood also? For which cause both you and all thy company are gathered together against the Lord? And what is Aaron that you murmur against him? And Moses sent to call Dathan and Abiram, the sons of Eliab, which said, We will not come up. Is it a small thing that thou hast brought us up out of the land that floweth with milk and honey to kill us in the wilderness? except thou make thyself altogether a prince over us? Moreover, thou hast not brought us into a land that floweth with milk and honey, or given us inheritance of fields and vineyards. Wilt thou put out the eyes of these men? We will not come up. And Moses was very wrathful, and said unto the Lord, Respect not thou their offering. I have not taken one ass from them, neither have I hurt one of them. And Moses said unto Korah, Be thou and all thy company before the Lord, thou and they and Aaron, tomorrow. And take every man his censer, and put incense in them, and bring ye before the Lord every man his censer, 250 censers, thou also and Aaron, each of you his censer. And they took every man his censer, and put fire in them, and laid incense thereon, and stood in the door of the tabernacle of the congregation with Moses and Aaron. And Korah gathered all the congregation against them unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the glory of the Lord appeared unto all the congregation. And the Lord spoke unto Moses and unto Aaron, saying, Separate yourselves from among this congregation, that I may consume them in a moment. And they fell upon their faces and said, O God, the God of the spirits of all flesh, shall one man sin, and will you be wrathful with all the congregation? And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto the congregation, saying, Get you up from about the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan and Abiram. And Moses rose up and went unto Dathan and Abiram, and the elders of Israel followed him. And he spoke unto the congregation, saying, Depart, I pray you, from the tents of these wicked men, and touch nothing of theirs, lest you be consumed in all their sins. So they got up from the tabernacle of Korah, Dathan, and Abiram on every side. And Dathan and Abiram came out, and stood in the door of their tents, and their wives and their sons and their little children. And Moses said, Hereby you shall know that the Lord has sent me to do all these works, for I have not done them of mine own mind. If these men die the common death of all men, or if they be visited after the visitation of all men, then the Lord has not sent me. But if the Lord make a new thing, and the earth open her mouth and swallow them up with all their that of appertains to them, and they go down quick into the pit, then you shall understand that these men have provoked the Lord. And it came to pass, as he had made an end of speaking all these words, that the ground broke asunder that was under them, and the earth opened her mouth and swallowed them up, and their houses, and all the men that appertained unto Korah, and all their goods. They and all that appertained to them went down alive into the pit, and the earth closed upon them, and they perished from among the congregation. And all Israel that were round about them fled at the cry of them, for they said, Lest the earth swallow us up also. And there came out fire from the Lord and consumed the 250 men that offered incense. And the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, Speak unto Eleazar, the son of Aaron, the priest, that he take up the censers out of the burning, and scatter thou the fire yonder, for they are hallowed. The censers of these sinners against their own souls, let them make them broad plates for covering of the altar, for they offered them before the Lord, therefore they are hallowed, and they shall be a sign unto the children of Israel. And Eleazar the priest took the brazen censers wherewith that were burnt had offered, and they were made broad plates for a covering of the altar, to be a memorial unto the children of Israel, that no stranger which is not of the seed of Aaron come near to offer incense before the Lord, that he be not as Korah and as his company, as the Lord said to him by the hand of Moses. But on the morrow, or the next day, all the congregation of the children of Israel complained or murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, "You have killed the people of the Lord." And it came to pass, when the congregation was gathered against Moses and against Aaron, that they looked toward the tabernacle of the congregation, and behold, the cloud covered it, and the glory of the Lord appeared. And Moses and Aaron came before the tabernacle of the congregation, and the Lord spoke unto Moses, saying, "Get you up from among this congregation, that I may consume them as in a moment." And they fell upon their faces. And Moses said unto Aaron, "Take a censer, and put fire therein from off the altar, and put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation, and make an atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Lord. The plague is begun." And Aaron took as Moses commanded, and ran into the midst of the congregation. And behold, the plague was begun among the people. And he put on incense, and made an atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. Now they that died of the plague were 14,700, beside them that died about the matter of Korah. And Aaron returned unto Moses, unto the door of the tabernacle of the congregation, and the plague was stopped. In this account, Korah, Abiram, Dathan, and On took with them 250 princes of the people, who were famous and men of renown amongst the people. And they rose up against Moses and Aaron and said, "You take too much upon you, seeing all the congregation are holy, every one of them, and the Lord is among them. Wherefore then lift you up yourselves above the congregation of the Lord?" And as a result of their lust for standing or power in the congregation, the Lord then opens the earth and swallows up Korah, Abiram, Dathan, and On, as well as their entire families, children, and all. The Lord also sends down fire to burn up the 250 princes who sided with Korah, Abiram, Dathan, and On. So what can we learn from this account? Let's ask that question. What can we learn from this account? Certainly, one thing we can learn is that we should never try and make ourselves to be in charge over the Lord's people as Moses was. And we should never try to make ourselves a high priest as Aaron was. These are things that only the Lord can ordain by His choosing alone. Since Yahweh did not choose Korah and his company to be in charge over the congregation, and he did not choose them to be high priests like Aaron was, it was a terrible sin for them to assume these roles upon themselves. This should be a warning unto us to never lust for power or standing that the Lord has not given us. Instead, we should always come with humility, as we read in the parable of Luke 14, verses 7 through 11. "And he put forth a parable to those who were bidden, when he marked how they chose out the chief rooms, saying unto them, When thou art bidden of any man to a wedding, sit not down in the highest room, lest a more honorable man than thou be bidden of him. And he that bade thee and him come and say to thee, Give this man place, and thou begin with shame to take the lowest room. But when thou art bidden, go and sit down in the lowest room, that when he that bade thee cometh, he may say unto thee, Friend, go up higher. Then shalt thou have worship in the presence of them that sit at meat with thee. For whosoever exalteth himself shall be abased, and he that humbleth himself shall be exalted." Again, we read in like Matthew 18, verses 1 through 4, at the same time came the disciples unto Jesus, saying, Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them, and said, Verily I say unto you, except you be converted and become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. Whosoever therefore shall humble himself as this little child, the same is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven. Now let's attempt to decipher what Korah's rebellion means spiritually. First, since we know that the old Israelite congregation is a type of the New Testament Christian churches and congregations, we know that Korah's rebellion has to do with people rebelling in the New Testament churches, and in that there were four men, Korah, Abiram, Dathan, and On, brings out the universality or worldwideness of this rebellion in the churches. And you can click on the spiritual meaning of the number four to see this. Furthermore, because there were 250 princes or men of renown that rebelled along with the four men, the number 250 can be broken down to 10 times 5 times 5, which symbolizes the complete judgment upon the churches. The number 10 points to completeness, the number 5 points to judgment, and there are two fives, which symbolizes those identified with the Word of God, namely the church or the churches. Therefore, what we have being symbolized in the account of Korah's rebellion is the worldwide rebellion of all the churches, which results in Yahweh bringing His complete judgment upon them. From our vantage point, we know that that was worldwide judgment against the churches, and it began on May 21, 1988. Next, we are told that Korah and company rebelled against Moses and Aaron. Now, since both Moses and Aaron are types of Christ, we know that this rebellion of all the churches is against Christ. In addition, it is also a rebellion against the elect, as the two people, Moses and Aaron, symbolize the church. But this time, only the eternal church or elect, and not the corporate church. So this rebellion of all the churches is not only against Christ, but also against the elect, and this is not surprising, since spiritually speaking, the elect are the body of Christ, and so that if the rebellion is against Christ, it is against the elect as well. Now we read that the four rebellious men and the 250 princes were told to come forward the next day to burn incense before the Lord to discover whom the Lord had chosen. The burning of incense was an earthly picture of their atonement for sins. Obviously, they had no real atonement for their sins, as they were all destroyed. Indeed, they are all a picture of all the leading and renowned men of the churches who rose up against Christ to worship their false Christ, Satan. These people never did have the salvation of Jesus Christ, but instead had a false Christ, and therefore a false atonement which could not atone for their sins. So they were all destroyed by the earthquake, and the ground swallowing them up, and the fire which came down from heaven to destroy the 250 princes. This judgment was a picture of the spiritual judgment that began with the churches on May 21, 1988. The only ones who were not destroyed by this judgment were the elect, who were typified by Moses and Aaron. Eventually, as we know, the elect obeyed the Lord's command to depart out from all the churches, and the churches were left to the unsaved to be led astray as a judgment against them. This was the Great Tribulation from May 21, 1988 to May 21, 2011. But moving on, After the four men, their families, and the 250 princes were destroyed, we read the following: But on the morrow, all the congregation of the children of Israel murmured against Moses and against Aaron, saying, You have killed the people of the Lord. To keep the Lord from destroying everyone with a plague due to this complaining of the people, Moses says the following in verses 46 to 48, And Moses said unto Aaron, Take a censer, and put fire therein from off the altar, and put on incense, and go quickly unto the congregation, and make atonement for them. For there is wrath gone out from the Lord, the plague is begun. And Aaron took as Moses commanded, and ran into the midst of the congregation, and behold, the plague was begun among the people. And he put on incense, and made atonement for the people. And he stood between the dead and the living, and the plague was stopped. So, Aaron was able to make atonement for the Israelites by burning incense in their midst. Aaron's burning of this incense represents the atonement of Jesus Christ, as Aaron was a type of Christ, and his burning of the incense was a type of Jesus making atonement for his elect in 33 AD, which paid for the sins of all the elect. The result of this atonement of Christ is that the plague of death that all his elect deserved was stopped dead in its tracks, so that all the elect would live while all the others in the congregation would die, which is what happened in all the churches between May 21, 1988 and May 21, 2011. All the elect were spiritually saved and lived through the atoning work of Christ, but all the non-elect in the churches spiritually died due to judgment. And to reveal who had died and who lived in the congregation, the Lord eventually brought his people out of the churches to return never again, while the churches were given over to the false Christ and his false teachings. And you can click on the link to see why all of his elect should have left the churches long ago. So, in Korah's rebellion, we see a type of all the churches rising up against Christ and his elect to replace Christ with Satan, the false Christ. And as a result, judgment fell upon all the churches worldwide. The elect in these churches were saved by the atoning work of Christ, as typified by Aaron's burning of incense. But the non-elect were sealed unto death, as typified by their burning of their incense, their atonement, because it was a failure. And the earth swallowed up the four rebellious men and their families, as well as the fire destroyed the 250 princes. This was all another example wherein the Israelites hardened their hearts, were erred or strayed by sin in their hearts, and did not know the ways of the Lord. In conclusion, we first looked at verse 10 and 11 of Hebrews 3. Verse 10 stated, Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, They do always err in their heart, and they have not known my ways. Actually, the more literal translation of that verse was, Wherefore I was grieved with that generation, and said, They are always being erred, or strayed by sin in their heart, and they did not know my ways. It wasn't that they always erred themselves, but it was that they always were being erred or strayed by sin in their hearts. This is why they did not know the ways of the Lord, and why Yahweh was grieved with that generation. Then we looked at verse 11, which states, So I swore in my wrath, they shall not enter into my rest. In this verse, we identified the term rest as referring to the salvation that all the elect entered into once spiritually saved. It could also refer to the rest in which the elect enter into once they go to heaven. Therefore, the term rest had a double application. One application is the rest we enter into by being born in Christ Jesus, and another application is the rest we enter into when we do finally go to heaven. This all puts the focus on our two-part salvation. One spiritual and inward, the other is physical and outward. One took place at the time in which we were born from above or born again. The other takes place on the last day when we receive our new resurrected bodies to live forever in the new heaven and earth. Finally, we looked at the incident in Israel's history known as Korah's Rebellion. This whole rebellion of four men and 250 princes of the people is a picture of the worldwide rebellion of all the churches. They all rose up against Christ only to be judged, which we know began on May 21, 1988. Because the elect were a part of the churches at that time, it was only because of the atonement of Christ, as typified by Aaron burning incense in the midst of the people, that the elect were spared from this judgment. Eventually, as we know from other studies, the elect were called out from the churches in obedience to the Lord's command, and they are now all outside the churches as they learn to patiently wait for the appearing of the Lord, when their complete rest will be realized to the full. Now to the true elect of Yahweh, may the Lord bless thee and keep thee. The Lord make his face shine upon thee and be gracious unto thee. The Lord lift up his countenance upon thee and give thee peace.